You're listening to On the Breath, the power of voice in the world. And I'm your host, SJ Harrison. I have just been having a wonderful laugh with my friend Alison Kinnear. Alison is a women's empowerment coach and speaker for over 20 years. She's worked with people in high-stakes professional world, frequently gives talks on managing stress and overcoming imposter syndrome. So welcome, Ali.
Oh, thank you so much for having me here, SJ. I'm so excited and delighted to talk to you and your people.
Thank you. So I think we can just start by, I'd love to start by talking about some of the transitions that you've had in your work life before we get to the central questions that I ask everyone. And I'm specifically thinking of your transition from when I knew you, when you were here in California, in Silicon Valley, and you were working at Google, and then what that was like in terms of voice, because I've heard you talk to me about that aspect of your life and the things you realized and the things that you felt then, and now you're an entrepreneur. So that's quite a leap. And I love to hear about the transitions, because when we have transitions, it's always us showing up with voice in a particular way when we initiate or respond forcefully to a transition in our lives.
SJ. Okay. So much there. I mean, So in 2007, I was hired at Google. I had some raging imposter syndrome that I did not know had a name. I just knew that I felt like I had everyone fooled, and I was just, I felt like if anybody saw the real me, I would be a fraud. And so I handled that like I always handled everything in life, a lot of perfecting, a lot of people pleasing, working myself to the bone, exhaustion, and staying silent. Like when it comes to my voice, it was, I mean, I'm an external processor. So like talking helps me think. So I've always been a chatty person and kind of not afraid to speak, but whenever I would speak, I would have this internal dialogue going, what is everyone thinking? What is everyone thinking? What is everyone thinking? What is everyone thinking? And so even though I think for my colleagues, they would be like, hey, you should ask this question, because they wouldn't want to raise their hand. So I would, and I would speak, but I would also be sitting with the panic of afterwards. And then I would silence myself in a lot of other smaller ways. You know, part of being a people pleaser is just trying to figure out, okay, what is it that you want? And how can I make what you want happen so that I don't have to have a real conversation with you about what you actually want and don't want? I just want to be able to anticipate that and try to make it happen, try to make everybody happy at all times. So that comes with its own kind of silencing.
That's wonderful, and I think really relatable. And I say wonderful because the part that I want to pull out of that is the way in which you were in some way perceived by colleagues as someone who could ask the question. And so it can be easy for us in so many ways to project onto those around us a level of confidence they may not actually have. So you clearly appeared to be a person of confidence. And in some ways, would you describe yourself as an extrovert?
Yeah, I would say I'm more on the extroverted side.
Right. There's definitely a spectrum, like with everything else. But we can think of extroverts that there's just this confidence. And so you are appearing confident and appearing like the person who could advocate and being that person in some way, but you didn't feel comfortable or free within that role, is what I'm hearing.
Absolutely. People are always surprised. I think people who knew me then, people who know me now, are surprised with the level of anxiety, the level of self-doubt, the level of like dark torment that I lived with on the inside.
Mm.
You know, it's like the outside seemed fine, which I have a hard time believing, because to me, it's my experience. My experience was just constant torment. So it was interesting to hear. And I think that's why I felt like I had everyone fooled.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. the inside of me was feeling one way, but the outside of me was appearing in a different way. And I think it's one of those things that made me successful, is because I was trying to think about like, okay, how can I anticipate everyone's needs? How can I do all the, you know, how can I make sure you're happy? How can I make sure you're happy? And don't worry about me and my happiness. I don't care about that. Like, I just want to make sure everybody else around me is okay. And that's, I mean, it works, and there's a cost. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that there could be a both and not an either or.
Do you mean that there is a win-win?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe that what was interesting to me is, as I pulled myself out of that self-doubt, out of the imposter syndrome, started using my voice more, what was fascinating to me, and I did not believe this was possible, was that my work got easier. My connections with other people got stronger. Like, the better boundaries mm-hmm. I was able to set, the more I trusted in my own voice, the more I trusted in my own thoughts and instincts and beliefs, the easier mm-hmm. life got around me. And I did not, it still kind of blows me away that that is possible, because as somebody who's always been the, you know, the peacemaker, the chameleon, the people pleaser, it's like, whoa, 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 wait, you're telling me relationships can be better? My communication can be better the more I trust and know and like voice my own thoughts mm-hmm. and opinions. I thought that would just tick everybody off.
Mm-hmm. People really respond to authenticity, because they also, whether they know it or not, they also are responding to honesty. So there's a sense of perhaps a deep felt sense of really knowing where you stand, I think. And then there's also the permission subtly given when you are authentic for others to be the same.
Definitely. And that happens all the time now. I'm like, if there is a hard thing to say, if there is a fear, if there is like a weirdness, an awkwardness or something, I want to be the first to say it, because people are thinking it, they're feeling mm-hmm. it, even if it's not conscious. And there's something that frees the whole room up when you can say what that is. Mm-hmm. And then it allows everybody to kind of like be able to do mm-hmm. this.
I'm more on the introverted side, but I have sometimes been the person in the room, as I'm sure you've heard this particular feedback. I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, and that's so the leap into entrepreneurship, when I found life coaching, at first I was like, what the heck is this life coaching business? But then when I like explored it, I was like, oh my God. Oh, this is the thing. This is what I have been made to do. And when I started going into it, and I was getting to the point of like, what's going to be the name of my company? Like, what do I call myself? Like, what is it? What is this thing that I do? I kept thinking about the women, brilliant women, who would sit next to me in meetings and go, hey, you should ask them. Or, hey, I'm so glad you said that. Or whatever it was. And I was like, why am I the spokeswoman? I want you to feel like you can be the one to do that. And so my first company was called Voice of Her Own, because I wanted the brilliant women around me to use their voices on their own and to support them in that journey. I've since moved states, so now it's just Allison Kinnear, but originally, for my first 4 or 5 years of business, it was Voice of Her Own, because that's what I wanted. I was like, there's something to do with voice. There's something here with voice that I really want for women to feel really like, I can not just know what I want, but I can speak it, I can articulate it. And I can feel resourceful enough in myself that I can handle whatever response happens.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so well put. Resourceful enough in oneself to handle whatever response happens. I really connect to that because I think that people who practice have struggled with the thing that they're teaching often. And in fact, if they haven't, I'm not sure that they can understand the journey as well. So I've certainly been a person who still has to think about, am I focusing too much on what others want? And so voice coming into being a voice coach has been so much about my own journey with voice, and it goes on. And I learn from my clients as well. I learn from their experiences, even as I'm supporting them with their journey with voice, which is both universal in some ways and always particular to that person.
In the coaching world, they say your mess becomes your message. And I think it's true. It goes back to that question of authenticity. You know, it's like, I don't know if I would trust somebody who hasn't struggled in the way that I have struggled. Do you know what I mean? Like, I want to hear, like, I need to feel seen. I need to feel heard. I need to feel understood. I don't need to like spend my time justifying and explaining why I felt like a fraud. I just need somebody to be like, oh yes, I get it. I get that you can be wildly accomplished on the outside and still feel like a fraud, like you've got everyone fooled on the inside. I get that. You don't need to explain it. You know what I mean? And I need people who their mess becomes their message, who can kind of guide me through that. And that's what I feel like is what I do with my people, and like what you're saying you do with your people around voice. And you learn from that. You learn, you know, new things from the people as you work with them.
It's wonderful. I think it's one of the most inspiring things to see clients blossom and find their own empowerment because I'm facilitating that, but theirs is the journey and theirs is the work. So I have a lot to offer, but it's them that's doing it because that's the only way it can be empowered. They're the ones in the trenches taking this next step. And I do find it one of the most inspiring experiences to coach people through voice on all the levels of the physical, psychological, and emotional.
Absolutely. It's an honor. It's an honor to be allowed in. I mean, you and I have done a little bit of voice stuff, and I'll tell you, like, I am on my growth edge, like vulnerability. It's amazing how much emotionality comes out working with voice. And
The physical voice.
oh yeah, the
So starting
physical.
with the physical voice into the emotion that comes is when we worked together briefly.
Yeah, definitely. And then let alone the emotion. I mean, there's so many ways that voice shows up, I think, in our life. And it's vulnerable. It's vulnerable work. So it's always an honor, whether you're doing, you know, physical voice coaching or you're just supporting people and empowering them to use their voices. Like, it's an honor to sit ringside with them and see their growth and development. Yeah. It's amazing.
Thank you, Ali. We clearly have a lot in common, which is one of the reasons that we are meeting together today. Ali is really a dear friend who I've never really lived very close to, but somehow we managed to maintain contact over the years, and I really appreciate that. I'd also like to ask you, I always start with the less happy experience, which is a disempowered moment with voice, however you wish to interpret that.
I got to tell you, it was like, how real do I want to be on SJ show?
Totally up to you.
But I felt like I wanted to be really real. My most dis I, because I shared about it on a Facebook Live several months ago, and I think it's important for other women to hear it. But my most disempowering time came when I was 19, and I was in a relationship with a really great guy. And he kind of surprised me with a summer visit, and one thing led to another, and I did not it was like, I could not say, hey, I paused my birth control. I asked him to pull out. He said, yes. He said, okay. And then he did not. Mm. So, and then I couldn't speak up. And, and so that led to a pregnancy, led to, I knew when I was pregnant, the thing that is so interesting, and this is another piece to this voice of her own. When I was in that dark, scary place, it was like, I'm telling you, SJ, it was like God came down, God, universe, spirit, whatever came down and was like, the lesson here is not for you to raise a child at this moment. That is not your lesson. Your lesson is for you to learn how to use your voice, because you didn't and you haven't. And so the lesson here is not about about going down the motherhood path, not at this point in time. This lesson is about speaking up. And that was like, I'm telling you, there was like this. That was the lesson for me. And so that was by far my most disempowered time. And it was a reckoning. Mm-hmm. It was a real reckoning.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think that sexual moments are among those emblematic and very common moments where women don't speak up. And I think in one sense, there's so many reasons that are obvious around that. But I think in one sense, it's we're not using our intellectual parts of our brain when we're in that state. It's not a state that lends itself necessarily to a lot of intellect, at least for me. Yeah. So there's so many components to why that's so difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think that any woman listening will understand how easy it is to be in that situation, whether it's receiving unwanted physical contact, yeah, harassment, mm-hmm, or with an intimate situation, with somebody that we believe that we are close to. It's so difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think with that situation, it's obvious that pace is helpful, but it's true with any conversation where we're tapping into something very deep is the slowing down. So when we need to show up with voice, and when we know we'll be in a situation where things could move too quickly to do that, thinking ahead about how to slow it down. Yeah. And when we're in the moment, we can't do that. But when we have any situation that could be intense, this is just coming to me in the moment, is how do we slow it down? If we struggle with these things with voice, whether in the sexual physical realm, whether in every other realm, how can we slow the communication down?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing I think about now is like, it was a surprise. It was a surprise visit. I wasn't expecting.
That's part of it, isn't it?
And so, and mm-hmm, that still trips me up.
Yes.
Whether it's not physical or sexual or anything, if I'm in a conversation and it escalates quickly or somebody gets upset, there's this, it's the fight, flight, freeze, fawn. I will freeze. I will fawn. I will try to like make everything good, you know, ignore myself and just try to diffuse the situation as best that I can. And it's like, there were many opportunities, even though things went quickly, there were many opportunities where my voice, and I knew it. My mind was spinning the whole time. Like, you got to say something. And how many times does that happen when your mind is going, are you going to say something now? Like, say something. And you just don't. And so that's what happened. And you know, suffer the consequences of that, right? Like learning how do you manage when you've silenced yourself and you go, shit.
So relatable. I've had that voice for a long period in my life. Within my marriage, there was a voice inside my head. You can't keep doing this. I just kept having a voice, and the voice got louder and louder and louder and louder and louder over a really long period of time. I've been in so many situations where that was exactly my experience. Say something. You have to say something. And it takes the right support and environment and internal choices to be in a situation where you can start to change that. Absolutely. That's what I've found, such as being in a really good relationship. Definitely. And feeling empowered in general in my life, being in charge of my destiny, just gave me that much space to start to test the limits of my own very strong survival mechanism of not speaking.
Definitely. I mean, I think back, I did not know for decades how to answer the question of, what do you want for dinner tonight? Mm. I couldn't answer that. I'd be like, I don't know. What do you want? Right? Deflect. I'm going to bring it right back to you, because I didn't know how to answer that question without feeling the fear of, not that anybody has ever like punished me for answering what I wanted for dinner, but there was a fear there. There was like, I'm just gonna silence myself. So like, I couldn't say what I wanted for dinner. I definitely couldn't say like, hey, you know, there's so many, like, let's stop or let's slow down or like try to be a bump in the road, a speed bump in the road to things. Like, I couldn't do it on the open highway. I couldn't do it when I needed to be a speed bump. I, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like part of it too became practicing those little muscles of going, well, what do I want to eat? What do I want to wear? What, instead of wearing what I think somebody else thinks I should wear, or decorating my house the way somebody else thinks I should decorate my house, or, you know, like all of those, there's all these little micro decisions that we make every day. And it's like, how much do you let other people's opinions, whether they're real or not, come into that decision-making? And how much do you go, well, what is it that I want? What is it that I want? And I think the more that muscle gets exercise, the easier it becomes then to say, and depending on the safety of the environment, to be able to say, hey, wait, hold on a second. Very delighted you're here. And can we take a moment to pause, slow down? I want to give you a little sense of what you're walking in on. Right? Which is really different.
I think you're also pointing to just a very, very important nugget of how to, which is, start with what do I want for dinner, if this is difficult for you, right? Don't start with the hardest thing, and be patient with yourself that your voice is wherever it's at. So if your voice is not at, slow down, really practice, I would like this for dinner. And you may need a bit of time. Again, I often need time for that question too, occasionally. If I'm just not in myself and not in tune with myself, I can't answer simple questions even. Definitely. But practicing answering the simple questions, even when no one's asking them, when no one's asking you the question, ask yourself the question. That's where we begin.
Do you know, I will tell you that, like, the most micro kind of, it's silly, like thinking about it, but a friend of mine gave me this beautiful teacup and saucer she's from Wales. And she gave me this beautiful Welsh, like English rose cup. And I love it. I never drink out of it because I'm like, oh, that's a special cup. And I somehow have some rule in my head that only special cups should be drank at special times. And I had to move it for some reason. I was about to be like, oh, I love that cup so much. And then I was going to move it to the side and like, oh, but now's not the time to have my tea out of that cup. And then I was like, wait, but I want to drink my tea out of that cup. I really enjoy it. Nobody's saying it. This is just a conversation happening in my own mind. But it's like, it's that muscle again of like, well, what do I want? Guess what? I want to drink out of the beautiful English rose cup and not just drink out of my, you know, little chintzy mugs that I usually drink out of. You know, it's like, how do we give ourselves permission to be like, I'm feeling pulled to this and I want it. And so therefore I'm going to act on it.
This is why curiosity and observation are foundational to transformative learning. You've just talked about curiosity and you observed your reaction. You were curious as to how it could be different or as to why, and you crossed that threshold. So not to dismiss the small thresholds, because that's actually how we cross the big thresholds.
100%.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that. I'd also like to ask you your most or a most empowered experience with voice.
You know, I've been thinking about this one, SJ. What happens with me with empowerment is self-doubt kind of rides shotgun with it.
Yes.
So it's never really like there's no self-doubt, because we want that curiosity. We want that self-reflection, right? So, but the times that I feel like I'm really in it, I'm in my body, I'm trusting, I'm in that flow, is when I am teaching, when I am coaching, when I am doing things like this, when I'm speaking. If I give myself some kind of permission, if I can give myself that permission and like suffer the consequences later, what I find is that, because that speaks to that fearful part of my mind that's like, oh, watch what you say. You shouldn't say that. You shouldn't say this. You shouldn't say that. If I'm shitting on myself, then I give myself that permission to say what I'm going to say, and I'll deal with what happens afterwards. And what's interesting is in my mind, it's always like, well, you will suffer the consequences later. But what ends up happening is like, there are no consequences later. I mean, if there are, it's just conversation. There's no dead ends. It's just like, hey, you know, I was a
little not life or death.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I was inspired by that, or I was confused by that, or, you know, it's just more conversation. Somebody asked me recently, have you ever regretted speaking what you're going to say and speaking from that empowered place? Have you ever regretted it? And it's like, no, the times that I've regretted speaking has been when I think this person will probably think this joke is funny, or this person, I'm trying to people please. If I'm trying to people please, that backfires all the time. But if I'm just like, I'm going to tune into my heart, I'm going to trust in myself, I'm going to trust that whatever I say, I'm going to be able to get out, like, you know, we'll be able to come to some kind of mutual understanding around. If I lead with that, with this kind of heart-centered place, rather than head, I'm trying to people please you place, it always works out. It has yet to fail me.
That's such good advice and way to frame just doing it. And I just would love to give the physical support for that, because one of the things that is very common is that people, when they're learning to breathe for speaking, they'll breathe, hold it, and then speak, or they'll breathe as such, in and out, so it's like this, and then speak, at which point they've also lost their breath. So in both instances, you don't have your full breath capacity. So you're talking about the psychological aspect of just speaking. And so the physical support for that is a deep breath and speak. That is how you cross the threshold. It's so simple, but notice if you're someone who is holding your breath after a big breath because you're afraid of speaking, or using the breath to calm yourself, but not filling up again, so that you can really launch the words off of the breath.
Ooh.
That's to the audience. So just a physical support for the way of being with speaking that Ali is talking about.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
And now we come to a fun part of the podcast, which is to tell us, whose voice do you love and why?
Oh my gosh. I So I know this is very common. I'm not alone in this, but Barry White's voice.
My partner does a great Barry White impression and it has me rolling on the floor because he has a deep voice. My partner has a deep voice. Oh, so funny. Yes.
I have
only funny in reference to my partner doing an impression.
I met a guy in college years and years ago. I was in college. I would go to like the Walgreens, the local Walgreens or whatever. And I was checking out one day and this young man was like, "How are you doing today?" I can't even do it. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, I found a reason." And I went back to the store like the next day and I was like, "I'm going to find him and I'm going to ask him." I would always try to go in his line just so I could hear his voice. And I was like, "I'm going to ask." He was the Barry White of Walgreens. I'm telling you, I was like, I remember making an excuse to be like, "Can you tell me where the sunscreen is?" Just so I could enjoy his like, "Oh yeah, it's down aisle 19. Go down on the left and it'll be midway." I was just like, "Thank you." I didn't care where the sunscreen was. I just made up an excuse to talk to him because I love that. It just moves me.
So I have a confession to make, yeah. And this is kind of a time-bending moment because this podcast will be released after a podcast / video that I'm working on right now called All My Favorite Voices. And I keep noticing, unusually for me in general, I'm very much speaking with women as well as men, doing reaction videos on women as well as men. But for the voices, I keep finding male voices that I really love. And which is interesting because I'm bi, but I don't have a particular sort of arousal response to the female voice in the same way as I do to the male voice.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm
just to,
I love
just
it.
To put that out there, you can listen to that now and you can see. And I'm really seeking some more international voices because I just watched a Korean drama that I was in love with for so many reasons along the values that it was expressing. And there is an actor in this series whose voice is so deep and so resonant. And I finally looked it up because I thought, I'm not the only one. Oh, yes, there's all kinds of things about his voice online. So you can check that out and see who it is I'm talking about.
I love it. I love it.
It will be released when you're listening to this podcast.
Fantastic. I can't wait. I love it.
So the final thing is, do you have a question for me?
My question, I think, for you, I thought of a couple, but what is one area of your life that you would like to use your voice more?
Oh my goodness. It's in my business, particularly. I am working a lot in general on, let me give you an example. So I'm going to give you a personal example that came up today. And it's a great example of how hard I find it to ask others to stretch. So I'm very capable. I'm an only child. Responsibility and independence was emphasized hugely in my family, from my father, that particular thing. And I think I'm also, in some ways, a person who enjoys being competent and enjoys doing. So very often, I do it because I can. So if I can, I do. So I've hurt my back, but I can make dinner. And I'm not asking enough of the people around me. So I am pushing my envelope every day to ask more of those around me. And a great example was, yesterday, my partner said, "I can't pick up Ronan, who is my youngest son. I can't," and he picks him up every day from school. "I can't pick up Ronan tomorrow. Can you do it?" And I said, "Yes." And then I paused. And then I said, Well, can you take him to school in the morning? And he said, oh, okay. And it was fine. Like, he's going to have his reaction because he doesn't tend to get up early and do that. It's a change in routine. Right. But of course, he saw it was fair and it was fine. Yeah. But I had a hard time even getting him to stick to it. So I didn't have to push him, but I knew I'd have to remind. So last night, okay, so tomorrow you're going to take Ronan. Yes, he says, that's fine. But I noted, this was that observation aspect. You find that difficult to do. I had to say, come on, make sure that you engrave that in stone. And you know he'll be fine about it. And even if he isn't, well, it's fair. But just asking him to stretch a bit more, instead of me being generally accommodating, well, I could do both things, but I have this podcast this morning. Mm-hmm. How much easier for me actually not to do the morning run. Mm-hmm. So it can be that small. And I'm having some aspects in my business as well that has to do with me being very accommodating around payment plans, and that's not working so well for me. Mm-hmm. And I know there are many coaches who charge the whole amount upfront, and it also speaks to having a certain commitment from the client as well as the coach. Mm-hmm. And so I am challenging myself about what I expect of my clients. Mm. And so both of these things are very interconnected. I will tend to want to be easy, to want to be just compassionate. And you can be compassionate and you can make exceptions. And it's much more favorable to the relationship if you set strong boundaries, and then you can choose, I'm going to make an exception here because, but that there's no expectation that you make an exception because you've made it very clear what the boundaries are. Mm. So I have been a little too flexible in my boundaries with some clients. Yeah. And so this is something I'm learning. It feels really good to say this because the whole point of this question is that I be vulnerable. So, but it feels really good to say it.
It does. And it brings me back to the first question you asked me, which is like, I was working at Google and now I'm an entrepreneur. And what's that transition like? And it's interesting to go from this place of feeling like I don't, I'm talking, but that doesn't mean I feel like I have a voice. And now to be in the entrepreneurial role where it's like, all right, where's your voice? Keep it up. Where do you want to take it? Where do you want to go? What do you want to say? How do you want to represent your work? Like, everything is just like, there's a higher demand for that than there mm-hmm. was ever before, as opposed to like working for someone else and punching in 9 to 5, So it is a greater demand. And this thing about boundaries, somebody in my meditation group said the acronym for polite is pissed off later in the evening.
I love that. I love it. Oh my gosh.
Yes, that is like when we loosen up the boundaries, what is it? We're trying to be polite. And then we just wind up pissed off later in the evening. I was like, that is amazing. And yeah.
I love that. That will be something I remember for the rest of my life. Ali, is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap this up?
I just have so much gratitude for being here, and I have so much gratitude and hope for the people who are listening who maybe have struggled with their voice. You may know that you're not alone, but there's something about hearing yourself in that story of going, I've had a hard time asking for help. I've had a hard time causing that moment in my partner. I've had a hard time listening to the say something. When you say something and ignoring it, and just to know like life is so much better on the other side. And that doesn't mean you have to alienate people. It doesn't mean you have to, tear apart your life. It just means that there's something better waiting on the other side when you can use your voice more. And that's it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that, Ali. I really appreciate the connection between us that has allowed us to go really deep in this particular interview. And it's wonderful. I have enjoyed speaking with you, as I always do, very much. So thank you.
Ooh, can I say one last thing? And
Yes.
you can choose to keep it in or not. I am so grateful for you expressing your voice. When I first met you, I was pregnant for the first, I mean, I knew you before, but then I got pregnant for the first time and I was throwing up almost every day and feeling so miserable. And I know you know this already, but you said to me, "I know, I love being a mother. And I love it so much, but I hated being pregnant." And that was something that I needed to hear at that moment. I didn't know some women hated being pregnant. I thought everyone enjoyed pregnant bliss and was like, "Oh, it's just roses and whatever." And it was so helpful for me that you shared your experience with me. It came at a pivotal point. I will never forget it. I will always be grateful for you speaking truth. Your truth to me, which was also my truth. Love being a mother, wouldn't change it for the world, but God help me, pregnancy is no joke.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to keep that in. I think it's really important for people to hear that. There'll be somebody listening who that will also be helpful for.
Definitely.
Thank you so much, Ali. You can find Alison at alisonkinnear.com. She's on LinkedIn and other platforms as well. Check out the podcast notes to learn more about how to connect with either of us. If you'd like to empower your voice into this new year, I do currently have a few slots available for new clients, so reach out and I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have. If you're curious about which K-drama I completely was enamored with and mentioned in this episode, it is My Mister. I'm SJ Harrison, and this has been On the Breath. You can find our podcast on my website, sjharrisoncoach.com, on Podbean, and other major platforms. If you're a person who likes to see us as well as hear, all these episodes are on my YouTube channel, SJ Harrison Voice and Performance. If you like this episode, leaving a review helps people like you find us. Thanks for listening.